reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, entitled Questions by the Sages, text number 4.
Nainissa nivisakshitre risaya sunakalaya satram swargaya lokaya sastra samamasata.
Once, in a holy place, in the forest of Nainisarana, great sages, headed by the sage Sunaka, assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. The prelude of the Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in the previous three slokas. Now the main topic of this great literature is being presented, Srimad Bhagavatam. After its first recitation by Srila Sukadeva Goswami, was repeated for the second time at Nainisarana. In the Vayavya Tantra, it is said that Brahma, the engineer of this particular universe, contemplated a great wheel which could enclose the universe. The hub of this great circle was fixed at a particular place known as Nainisarana. Similarly, there is another reference to the forest of Nainisarana in the Varaha Purana, where it is stated that by performance of sacrifice at this place, the strength of demoniac people is curtailed. Thus, Brahmanas prefer Nainisarana for sacrificial performances. The devotees of Lord Vishnu offer all kinds of sacrifices for his pleasure. The devotees are always attached to the service of the Lord, whereas fallen souls are attached to the pleasures of material existence. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that anything performed in the material world for any reason other than for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu causes further bondage for the performer. It is enjoined, therefore, that all acts must be performed sacrificially for the satisfaction of Vishnu and his devotees. This will bring everyone peace and prosperity. The great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general, and as such, the sages, headed by Sonaka and others, assembled at this holy place of Nainisarana with a program of performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know the right path for peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They're sincere friends to all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they're always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. Lord Vishnu is just like a great tree, and all others, including the demigods, men, siddhas, charanas, vijayadharas, and other living entities are like branches, twigs, and leaves of that tree. By pouring water on the root of the tree, all the parts of the tree are automatically nourished. Only those branches and leaves which are detached cannot be so satisfied. Detached branches and leaves dry up gradually despite all watering attempts. Similarly, human society, when it's detached from the personality of Godhead, like detached branches and leaves, is not capable of being watered. And one attempting to do so is simply wasting its energy and resources. The modern materialistic society is detached from its relation to the Supreme Lord. And all its plans, which are being made by atheistic leaders, are sure to be baffled at every step. Yet they do not wake up to this. In this age, the congregational chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the prescribed method for waking up. The ways and means are most scientifically presented by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And intelligent persons may take advantage of these teachings in order to bring about real peace and prosperity. Srimad Bhagavatam is also presented for the same purpose, and thus will be explained more specifically later in the text. The forest of Nainisarana. Nainisa, it is said, Nainisa, one who never closes the eyes. It is said, in this forest, Lord Vishnu never closes his eyes. And therefore, it is particularly a place where sacrifices are being performed and where great benedictions are being attained. Somehow it is said that actually Nainisarana is the very center of the universe. Right there, the hub of the universe. It was there that Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken by Suta Goswami, who had heard it from the from the mouth of Sukadev Goswami.
And therefore, Suta Goswami was a perfect representative because he had heard from a bona fide source. Only then can one deliver transcendental knowledge, because dharmam tu saksat bhagavatam, which means that true religious principles are coming down from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the time where everyone manufactures his own process. This is the age where everyone is rebelling against authority. This is the age where everyone wants to do whatever they want. And therefore, this is the age that the branches become disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because it's the will of the Supreme Lord that must prevail. That's the meaning of paying obeisances. We are not paying obeisances for the sake of fitness. Some sort of, you know, I certainly agree. We need a fitness program because, you know, certain parts of the body are growing more than other parts of the body. But anyway, what to do? You know. Therefore, fitness may have its place. And bowing down onto the ground may have some benefits, but that's not the purpose of it. The purpose of paying obeisances is then what? The purpose of paying obeisances is to bow not only our body, but to bow our will. It is to bow our will and to say, I'm bowing down before you. I'm submitting my will before yours. As you desire, my Lord, that will be done. That is what obeisances actually mean. So it is very significant, the internal experience of submitting ourselves before superior personalities. Superior personalities are personalities that can offer true happiness. Krishna and his representatives. Evam pam pra pratam nimam rajarsi yogi du sakalineya mata yoga nasta parantapa. So, Lord Krishna, he manifested this knowledge from within the heart of Lord Brahma. Then Lord Brahma, from his four mouths, spoke the Vedic literatures. And thus the Vedic literatures entered into the universe, and thus became known throughout the universe. Lord Brahma subsequently created from his mind so many exalted sages, and these sages became instruments in carrying forward Vedic literatures. And eventually, various sages became expert in different branches of knowledge. Some were studying the four Vedas. Some were expert in the Upanishads. Others were expert in the Puranas. And in this way, all branches of Vedic literature were divided. And it is said Suta Goswami was especially expert and trained in the Puranas. Still, he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam is interesting because Sukadev Goswami is in there. So if the Bhagavatam begins with Sukadev Goswami, then how is Sukadev in there? That I would like to know. I mean, really, something not quite right, wouldn't you think so? I mean, the book is spoken by Sukadev, and yet he's in there, and even his predecessors are in there. Yes, because although Bhagavatam is spoken, it doesn't mean that Bhagavatam begins with that time that Sukadeva Goswami spoke it. No. Bhagavatam is eternal. It is eternal. And sometimes it is revealed and sometimes the knowledge is covered. But Bhagavatam is eternal. It is knowledge of the Supreme Lord. It is always there, Bhagavatam. So in that way, again and again, Bhagavatam is revealed. But for us who live in the darkness of the age of Kali, especially, I think whoever controls the sound system, is in little down there's a bit of an echo. Echo, go, 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 go. Slightly down. Not too much. Thank you very much. But, yes. Okay. Happy. Don't touch. Go back. Thank you very much. So, this Bhagavatam, spoken by Sukadev Goswami originally, heard by many sages. It is mentioned, Krishna Swadamo Bhagate Dharma Ginani Visaha Kalo Nastadri Sandesha Puranarko Junodita, that when Krishna and his associates left this world, at that time Dharma and Gyan also left the planet. But it was again revived through Srimad Bhagavatam, which was shedding light in this dark age of Kali, as brilliant as the sun. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is known to be the literary incarnation of Krishna. And if just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we are directly associating with Krishna. So this is our meditation, somehow or other, to associate with Krishna as much as possible, to remember Krishna, to glorify Krishna, to worship Krishna, to serve Krishna, to chant the name of Krishna, kirtan, day in, day out, and each day we find a new reason to chant. So each day we fulfill our prescribed number of rounds, each day we are penetrating into the Bhagavatam. And in this way, it's a way of life. It's what we do. Living with the Bhagavatam. And in that way, gradually, one becomes transformed by the Bhagavatam and one becomes himself a living Bhagavatam. And that is, of course, the situation with Sukadev Goswami, with Suta Goswami. They were not just memorizing it, but they were really dedicated to living it. And that is also where our movement gains its strength. By living the Bhagavatam. And every man has an excuse in the world. Everyone. Everyone can find a reason why it's very difficult. Everyone. I don't know if you can find, I can. I'm not only one. Many reasons why it's almost impossible, actually. So many reasons. No time, too tired, not healthy, and so on. Too many things, too many people, not enough money, and long list. Why it's not possible to read the Bible. But still, this is Vaishnava culture. Without the Bhagavatam, how can we say that we are Vaishnavas?
Without the Bhagavatam, our life is incomplete. Without the Bhagavatam, how can we understand? How can we remember? If we would have to, from memory, describe Krishna, all right, maybe we can go for a while. But at one point it runs out. We run out of ammunition. We begin to repeat ourselves. Yellow dhoti, yellow dhoti, fruit. So many things like this. At one point, we have to repeat ourselves. It is the Bhagavatam that refreshes our thought, that again brings new elements about Krishna that we never discovered, and yet we discover them now. So like this, we are preparing that forest of Nainisaranya, that place which is so essential. As soon as we say Nainisaranya, we remember Srimad Bhagavatam. And Bhagavatam is being spoken. That's the idea, that somehow or another, Nityam Bhagavata Sevya, that every day we render service to the Bhagavatam. So, Srila Prabhupada said that this Bhagavatam, it said, he used his own English, he said, like a sugar doll, you can taste it and it is sweet on all sides. A lolly, I guess. He called it a sugar doll, but I guess we get the idea. So I'll start with an experiment, and I've just opened it now, and I have no idea what we get. But what we're getting is the passing away of Bhismadeva. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because now I've transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's hearts, even in the hearts of the mental speculations. He's in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. So now we've gone forward, and we have discussed the battle of Kurukshetra and Bhishmadev, who is coming to the end of his life in this world. But Bhishmadev is very fortunate, because Bhishmadev has spent his life dedicated to Krishna, even although the circumstances were not supportive. There were many. First of all, he was living in a family that was not exactly favorable towards Krishna. Okay, except for the Pandavas, but the Kurus, they were ready to destroy Krishna, Arjuna, the Pandavas. It was a serious fight. They hurled a lot of weapons in Krishna's direction. Bhishmadev, although he was in that association, never became corrupted. His devotion remained unaffected. So even although he was from a family that were not devotees, he was a devotee. And then this situation happened where, on behalf of his younger brother, he went to this Swayamvar. And there, yes, there was in particular this princess named Amba. And he conquered this Amba. Amba was not so pleased with that, because she had initially another prince in mind. But anyway, so then Bhishma said that he had won the Swayamvar, he'd entered it on behalf of his brother, and therefore presented the bride to his brother. And then his brother died. Now, the complication was that Bhishma had a lifetime vow. A lifetime vow to be a brahmachari. You see. So he got caught here in this situation, basically. He lived with his brahmachari vow for life, and he had conquered this lady for his brother. And then the brother dies. And the lady turned around and said, "So? And when is the marriage?" You have conquered in the Swayamvara. Thou shalt marry me. Okay? And like that, you know, and Bhishma stayed strict to his vow of brahmacharya. Who could have done it? He wasn't living in an ashram that was supporting him. He wasn't like living in a temple where, you know, in the morning, you know, you see only saffron when you open your eyes. And where, you know, you chant and like together with other brahmacharis, as brahmacharis do. It's a certain species. What can we say? Anyway, so no. He was living in a palace. Right? In palaces in the morning, life is not austere. I mean, in palaces, you know. Oh, yes, you are awoken by servants who are singing your glories. Bhishma, the wonderful great Bhishma.
Bhishma the great.
Yes. What were you saying, Bhishma, the most wonderful? So this is how kings would be woken up. It's different in the brahmacharya ashram, I can tell you that. So anyway, but in spite of living in all this comfort, in spite of being not in a favorable family, Bhishmadev never wavered. He always remained fixed within. And that's it. So as I'm saying, everyone has an excuse. Right? Everyone has a reason, and Bhishmadev had better excuses. Better. It's very difficult. You may say, it's hard when you're poor. Right? But have you tried being rich? It's hard to be a devotee when you're poor. But it's even harder to be a devotee when you're rich. When you're poor, well, you tend to pray, "Oh Lord, won't you buy me something?" Lord, buy me something, for Christmas is just gone, I didn't get anything yet. Something. But the rich man is just like so busy, enjoying, you know, all these things, just endless enjoyment. Very hard to be Krishna conscious. So, but Bhishmadev, he has his challenges, but he rose to the challenges. So this is the fact, that every individual has his challenges, and everyone has to rise to the fact, and no one has a valid excuse. If you go to India, there you have Bhrigu readers. You know, they are astrologers, and they can go and find somewhere some scroll, you know, something written on a palm leaf. They have thousands and thousands of these palm leaves everywhere. And if you're lucky, they'll find your palm leaf. So you can go there, and they may have your palm leaf. If they don't have, you have to go to another library, and they may have. And when they find your palm leaf, they can tell you everything about your life, about your previous life, and the future, and everything. They know everything about you, and they'll tell you. They tell you, you grew up in a white house. And it's true. How do they know? Yeah. They know things. So first they say things about your life, four or five things, and it's spot on, completely right. And how could they have known specific things? And then they start to tell you that in your last life you were a great Vaishnava, a prince in Orissa, and you know, a great devotee of Jagannath. Ah, yes. And that, but that somehow or other one day you made one mistake. And for that mistake, now you have come back again, this time in South Africa. You know, and here you are, right? Amazing, isn't it? So yes, it's like that, you know. In the last life, already a great devotee, and we made one mistake, and here we are, gonna pay for it, right? Here we are. So, how many mistakes have we already made this lifetime? Have you thought about that? If we've made more than one, then what's going to happen? That's the question. So, it's very interesting. We were devotees in last life. It means we blew it. Sorry to say, we blew it. We didn't go back to God yet. So let's not blow it again. Let's be more careful not to blow it, to somehow or other be like Vishwadev. Fixed throughout. It's the faithful. It's the one who are fixed throughout, that stand out. And it's always been like that. It's always been a few. Most people, oh, it's so difficult. I cannot get my hand in my feet back. Oh, they are so heavy. Heavy. And to move my tongue. Oh, my tongue is so tired. No, I cannot chant. Prabhupada like this, chant, chant, can't. The cartoon. So somehow or other, let us do it. A lifetime with chanting Hare Krishna, a lifetime with the Bhagavatam. Simple things. Everyone can have. Everyone can have Bhagavatam at home. Thank you. And that is what Srila Prabhupada said, right? Srila Prabhupada said that he wanted Srimad Bhagavatam to be in every home. So you have. Yes, and then you come in the home, and then you take the Bhagavatam off the shelf, and you open it up, and this huge cloud of dust comes out. Of course, it should not just be in the home, we should also read it every day, somehow. Anyway, this is what it means to be a devotee. So the first question is, what does Bhagavatam mean? Ba means, it has different meanings, but one meaning of Ba is bhajaniya, that the worshipable. And Ga means guna, the worshipable qualities. And Va means Vasista, which means it is irresistible. So
Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means he whose qualities are irresistible. You have to worship him. That's basic. Vajaniya guna vishishta. And Bhagavatam is that narration about that personality who is irresistible. You have to worship him. This is from Jiva Goswami. Does it please Krishna when one dreams of performing devotional service and of chanting? Or is it just a dream? Can it in any way be pleasing to Krishna? Yeah, it's one approach to devotional service. You know. Prabhu, can you help on the Sunday feast? Nah, sorry. Sorry. Yeah, it hurt my head. Prabhu, can you help? No, I'm sorry. I hurt my hand. Sorry. Gosh, that was a tiring day. I had to say no so many times. I'm totally exhausted. Anyway, I'm deserving some rest. Ah, sweet dreams are coming. Oh, yes. Sleep, sleep. Dreaming that I'm serving Krishna. So, back to your question. Does it please Krishna when one dreams of performing devotional service and of chanting, or is it just a dream? Oh yes, it is pleasing to Krishna. Oh, let us dream about Krishna. Didn't Srila Prabhupada say that at night, before taking rest, we should drink a cup of warm milk, and that while doing so, we should at least for 15 minutes hear from the Krishna book? And then he said, we will dream of Krishna. Huh? So. That we can do. And then dream of Krishna. So that is very nice. But of course, when we wake up, it doesn't stop. Then also we should serve Krishna. Not only while we dream, but also in real life. We should always serve Krishna. One who has always served Krishna will also dream about serving Krishna. When we serve Krishna in everyday life, then our dreams will also be full of Krishna. That's how it is. If you never do anything for Krishna, then you think you're going to dream of Krishna and do devotional service. No, if you always say no in real life, then in your dream, when Krishna comes and says, excuse me, can you give me a hand? And you say, sorry Krishna, I hurt my head. So like this, we will... Therefore, this is Abhyasi Yogi Yukhena Tita Sananyagamina Paramam Purusham Diyam Yati Parcham Sintya. You have to practice. You have to practice. That's why we have a spiritual master. So that we can practice devotional service on the spiritual master. And when it's perfect, then we can serve Krishna directly. First, we can cook for the spiritual master. And then when we're expert, then we can cook for Krishna. When we are pure. Prabhupada said that we practice on the spiritual master. When I read that, I was a little shocked. Anyway, please continue dreaming about Krishna. And write them down, your dreams of Krishna, and share them on Facebook. This question is not related to the topic. I would like to ask, when a husband and wife get married, they vow that they will be together for 7 lifetimes. What if the wife passes away and thinks of Krishna? She will go to Lord Sri Krishna, but if the husband doesn't think of Krishna at the time of death, how will they be together? Yeah. He found a loophole, isn't he?
this is a complication. Well, in that case, when one goes back to Godhead, then that one will take the other one also. If you've been nice enough, of course. Keep that in mind. If you keep on treating me like this, when I'll be in the spiritual world, I'll leave you in the material world for a little while longer. Just let you know. A Vaishnava argument. Yeah, there are many varieties. I think, that when there are such benedictions given, such benedictions can also be superseded. And it's not that it always has to happen in that way, but it can happen in this way. And if one goes back to Godhead, then supersede it. It's, if you have a million, don't worry about one rupee, or one red. It's, you already have the million. When we're in the spiritual world, these seven marriages already fulfilled. And who knows, maybe Krishna finds a way in the spiritual world for your specific case, when you arrive somehow or other. Krishna somehow or other keeps this word. So how this one's going to be resolved, you have to wait till you get to the spiritual world. You mentioned in your class that we need to find a new reason to chant every day. What do you mean by this?
Well, what I mean to say is we must be motivated. Motivated. Otherwise, one day we may wind up with an identity crisis. I was on my travels, one day came in a beach in a town on the ocean, and I went to the temple, and when I came to the temple president wasn't there, and the devotees said, he went to the beach. I said, oh, okay. They said, 3 days ago. I said, 3 days ago? What do you mean? He says, yes, he went to the beach, and he didn't come back. I said, really? What happened? He said, we don't know. He's just sitting there in front of the ocean. Well, me always looking for an excuse to go to the beach. Let's go. Right? So we went. And I saw him sitting there on the beach. So they put me out of the car and I walked up to him and sat down next to him. After about 15 minutes, I said, nice view, isn't it? strike up a conversation. And eventually, it all came out. It all came out. He had come to the point in his life where the question hit him. The question, who am I really? And already for 3 days he was thinking about that and he hadn't gotten any further. That's what you call an identity crisis. When for a long time you have externally done certain things, but you haven't really been part of it with your heart. And then for years you've played the part of a devotee, but you didn't really invest your heart into it. You didn't really make it part of you. You didn't really do it because you wanted to do it for Krishna. You just, for some reason, did it. Don't know why, actually, but somehow or other you did it. And then one day, you may find your beach.
Who am I really?
So, therefore, yes, we got to discover reasons why. Why to chant? Why to serve? Why to sing for Krishna? Discover the reasons. Discover every day fresh reasons. Why? Why it's better? Why there's nothing else to do? We must discover this again and again. So that our motivation becomes stronger, deeper, and fresh. Then we'll be strong. Then don't worry about the beach. Yeah, well, with that I have tried to answer your questions, and if anyone has one that was forgotten to be written, then I'll answer that one also, otherwise. Come. Yes.
Recently in a class, and I just want to verify this, they said that the reason why he didn't, when Draupadi asked him, why didn't you protest during the disrobing, and he said it was because of the bad association with it, so I want to verify whether this is the case.
Actually, if you read the Mahabharata on that situation, where it is described that Bhishma Dev didn't interfere during the time when Draupadi was being disrobed, it said that Bhishma Dev had been given some contaminated food at the time, and that affected his consciousness. So still not at fault. Meanwhile, be careful of contaminated food. Anyway, it's very nice to sort of spend a little time like this, and I thank you for that. Somehow or other, I got myself talked into doing two Sunday programs today, and also in Madrid, so therefore I'm sort of thinking about the next, I'm taking a little break in between, because you can fly in from there, so I want to be excused from the next kirtan, if it is all right. This time, otherwise, get no break, too tired, then maybe something will break. Tomorrow, flying to Europe. So, sort of, did the two Sunday feasts, so I could say hello, goodbye, all at once, in one breath, to all of you. Nice to see you again, and at the same time, very happy to see you again. At the same time, very sorry that got to go now.
Good to see you again.
That's kind of the situation today. Yeah, it's one of those, but nonetheless, it's heartfelt. I am happy to see you all, and at least I could be here for a moment.
But you are going to see us again.
I'm going to see you again.
Your promise.
I promised. What have I promised? What is it? Have I promised the Ramanami program? The thing is that it's usually in April. And this year I will not be in South Africa in April. Cannot be. So the next time,
maybe we play the Krishna and it takes the mind.
No, it's not my mind. It's just my ticket. Costs a lot of money. But otherwise, surely, whenever the opportunity is there, it was lots of fun. We'll do it. Yeah. Right, true. But,
come again. These days I'm missing Ratiyatra because I've been caught in Mayapur, but when I'm free I'll come again. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess the program can